You are Locked On Braves, your daily Atlanta Braves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello there, everybody. It's been a minute since we've gotten to talk here on the Locked On Braves podcast, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On Braves and all of its likewise affiliates can be found on any and all major podcasting platforms, whether that be Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, what have you. You can find Locked On podcasts basically anywhere you care to look, covering a wide range of sports from NHL, NFL, NBA, MLB, whatever it is. You can find a Locked On station tuned in, not just for your viewing pleasure, but for your favorite team as well. The Locked On Podcast Network makes it easy to have daily updates for your favorite shows. Locked On Podcast Network. Get in and get used to it. All right, so it's been a minute since we've had a talk here on Locked On Braves, but that doesn't mean there hasn't been a lot going on. It just means that I am horrible at doing shows in the offseason. As we're getting closer and closer to the regular season, there is now enough information here for me to actually have a full set of shows. So without further ado, to get into this first episode, really what I'm going to call my first episode of the new year, there's only one thing to talk about, and that is the news that broke last week with Josh Donaldson, who is not re-signing with the Atlanta Braves, is now a Minnesota Twin. And I know my Locked On Twins affiliate, my Locked On Twins host brethren, are very happy right now. For the Braves, this is not a great thing. I don't know whether it was just kind of assumed that the Braves would get Josh Donaldson, because it was pretty well known that Donaldson was going to give the Braves a last ride of refusal. And people thought, as long as it didn't get crazy, well, then he would be a Brave. Then reports came out that what he signed for the Twins for is 4 years and $92 million with a fifth year option, where if the option is declined, he gets $8 million, which would take it to a $100 million contract. If accepted, then it would be a 5 year and $108 million contract. While the numbers aren't that crazy, I believe it is about $21 million for the life of it. I don't think it's quite 25. But when you go through looking at these, at this deal in particular, this Josh Donaldson deal, there's a couple things that you have to pay attention to. Number one, if you listen to Josh talk about it, I'm sure you guys have all seen it on Twitter, Josh did an interview with somebody up in Minnesota, and it really did sound like he wanted to come back to the Braves. He loved it here. He went to Auburn in college. He's from around this type of area, and he was just such a good fit on this team that you kind of thought that as long as the bidding didn't get crazy, he would be back here in Atlanta. Unfortunately, I don't know if it was the years or the money, but it sounds like the years. Donaldson's saying that the offer that he got from the Braves was not anywhere near close, financially speaking, to what he got from the Twins. And that kind of makes you wonder, what exactly did the Braves actually offer him? I told you guys at the end of the season, I've been saying it on the Platinum Sombrero Show, if you guys have been listening to the simulcasts, I thought that the Braves would give him a 3-year deal with a 4th-year option, probably worth anywhere from $75 to $80 million. It doesn't even sound like they got that high. I mean, just listening to the way that Donaldson was talking about it, it almost sounds like the Braves tried to give him a 2-year deal with a 3rd-year option, probably somewhere around $250 with a 3rd-year option for an additional $375. And I'm not... This is really tricky. I don't know... I don't really know how I feel about it. I mean, when you look at the deal, 4 years is a lot when you're talking about somebody that's going to be 37 at the end of it, almost 38. And you talk about a potential fifth year being 38 years old. There are not many players over the age of 35 who are still elite offensive players. In fact, the only one that really comes to mind that's an elite offensive player is Nelson Cruz. And Nelson Cruz, there's a couple other things that you got to throw in there. There's always the caveat that Nelson Cruz didn't become a major league player until he was almost 30. Now, Donaldson, by the way, kind of followed the same suit. Remember, he was drafted as a catcher, and it took him until I believe he was 27 before he made his big league debut. And from his big league debut on, he kind of started dominating. But he's not as old in years, or in baseball years, professional baseball years, as a lot of these other players are. Now, that could bode well for him. Means he hasn't quite put up the same mileage on the tires that somebody like Manny Machado will have by the time he's the same age. But the thing you have to consider is once you get up to that age, it's not just about how much you've played. It also comes into things like your soft tissue injuries. Because as you get older, especially after 35, your body just can't put up with the rigors that it could when it was 30 or 28. It's just a different body. And I can't really fault the Braves for not wanting to go 4 years with the potential fifth. But I think it would be a lot more palatable if the Braves had done something earlier to kind of, you know, assuage the situation. Instead, right now, you're talking about a team that has currently Nick Markakis, or more likely, Travis d'Arnaud batting fourth behind Freddie Freeman. And the lineup after that just gets worse and worse and worse. You're talking about having to rely on Johan Camargo and Austin Riley to hold down the fort at third base. You've got a platoon with Nick Markakis and Adam Duvall in left field. You're hoping that Ender Inciarte is able to put a full season together if he's healthy and actually hit the first half like he does the second half. You're hoping that Dansby Swanson breaks out of his slump. There's a lot of hopes, and that's not exactly what a team looking to be a World Series contender wants to go into the season with. Now, granted, there's still some time before the season starts, but it's not like there's 2 months to go. I mean, there's like 1 month until spring training officially starts. It is very quickly running out of time, and I know the Braves did a lot last season coming right into the season. The problem was last year felt hectic. It felt rushed. Luckily, Matt Joyce worked out, because that had a potential to be horrific. I mean, you saw what they had to do with the bullpen. They rolled out something like 20 different relievers, got pitching time in the Braves bullpen last season. It's absolutely insane. You look at the bullpen right now, the only pitcher in this bullpen that was in the bullpen on opening day is Luke Jackson. It's not something that Braves fans really wanted to hear, knowing how last season ended in the Game 5 and how you lost to a very subpar subpar Cardinals team, but a team that was definitely miles beneath you as far as talent goes. And guys were looking into this offseason thinking, all right, we got Acuna and Albies under such great contract extensions. We don't really have to pay anybody. Now's the time where the Braves can kind of go big. They've jacked up the spending. Liberty Media, for all the talk that Liberty Media is super cheap, they've spent a ton of money this offseason. The Braves have spent like the fifth most money this offseason, just behind a bunch of the other teams that have, you know, gotten like Anthony Rendon or Gerrit Cole, and behind the White Sox, who have shelled out like $110 million. But the Braves have spent about $100 million this offseason revamping that bullpen, and it is a dang good bullpen. The problem is now, while you've solidified the bullpen and helped round out your team, now your offense and your defense, quite frankly, are going to suffer unless you can get this fourth spot figured out. And I've got some thoughts on the matter. I'm going to discuss one of the players in the second segment that we're going to get to in a second. But this is not the spot that you want to be in a division that's still going to be tough. While the Nationals are more than likely going to take a step back, but I mean, there's just no way to lose an Anthony Rendon and still be the same. They do have a lot to look forward to, talking about another year of Juan Soto, Victor Robles, now that he's got some time under his belt. Carter Kieboom looks like he's going to play third base, barring any trades for them. They brought back Steven Strasburg to go with Max Scherzer and Patrick Corbin for another year. They've got a lot going on. They're still a really good team. The Mets have some really good pieces, but they're the Mets, so something will happen, and they'll end up 500 at the deadline. We'll see what happens there. But the Phillies are going to be healthy. And that, to me, is a very, very dangerous team. People in Braves country love to talk about how Bryce Harper was, like, bad last year for some reason, even though he was not. Statistically, he was, I'm going to say this, and this is going to make a lot of people mad, but he was on par with Freddie Freeman. If you believe in F-War, he was better than Freddie Freeman, depending on how you feel about defense. I understand Freddie's a first baseman, and a first baseman's always going to be ranked below a right fielder. But Bryce Harper did not have a bad season. He was worth 4.6 WAR. That's a very, very good season. He's not paid a lot of money. He's paid, $300 million, but it's over 13 years. He's basically paid $25 million a season. As a matter of fact, he made $11 million last season. So they got a good season out of Bryce. They'll get Andrew McCutchen back healthy. They've got Scott Kingery, who's going into another year. And Scott Kingery really broke out last year. They've added Didi Gregorius, who's going to shore up not just their defense, but he's going to give them a good bat right there as well. Gene Segura is going to move over to second base. I mean, there's a lot going on with this Phillies team. And while they lost Michael Franco, that's almost addition by subtraction. They're probably the team that worries me the most right now. They're a team that can really step up depending on how their pitching turns out. And they spend a lot of money to bring in Zach Wheeler. And while the narrative on Wheeler is he can't stay healthy, Wheeler's put up back-to-back seasons up over 4 F4, which is very hard to do for a pitcher. So it lets you know just how good Zach Wheeler has been and how atrocious that Mets defense has been behind him. So pairing Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler up is a very good thing for the Phillies. And I hate to say it because I hate the Phillies. But right now, I'm not super comfortable with the Braves heading into opening day. Now, I'll put a poll up on Twitter here, and you guys can let me know how you feel about how the offseason is going, whether you think it's a success, whether you think they should have gone in on Donaldson. I'll figure out what the poll is going to run, but make sure you're checking Twitter, and I'll put a poll out for you guys as well, and we can see what you guys are thinking. But I'm going to take the first break of the show. When I come back, I'm going to discuss maybe the guy who's been talked about the most for the Braves opening. He fits two different places. We'll talk about that coming up next, right here on Locked On Braves. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. As I mentioned, we're going to talk about one player today who seems to get bandied about in Braves country a lot, and it happened during the season, it happened as soon as the season ended, and it's going to continue happening, and it is the player that I feel is the most likely to be a Brave, and that is Chris Bryant. As you guys know, I'm a big proponent of Chris Bryant. Last year, a lot of people are downing on his defense. I think the shoulder had a lot to do with his defense last season. I think a year removed from it, you'll start to see him kind of return, maybe not quite to what he was pre-injury form defensively, where he was a positive defender. Wasn't a great defender, but he's still a positive defender. I think he'll be more average back to his 2018 form defensively and his 2017 form as opposed to his 2019 form. But what Chris Bryant is a young superstar offensive player. Now, if you're just looking at war totals, you're talking about a guy that has put up 7 war seasons in the past, that has put up 6 war seasons. Last year was a little bit lower for him at 4.8, but it was just below Josh Donaldson's 4.9. This guy's going to hit you 30 home runs. He's going to hit 100 RBIs. And what the thing about Bryant is, you can play him in one of two spots, and either of these two spots are the biggest holes on the Braves. You could play him in left field, or you could play him at third base. It doesn't really matter. He's versatile enough to play both, and I think being able to put him in one spot and leave him in one spot will actually do wonders for his defense. When you look at guys that play multiple positions, normally the trade-off to being versatile enough to play a whole bunch of spots is you end up not being as dedicated at one single spot, so your defense starts to fall. I think if you get him in one single spot and allow him to stick there, I think you see his defense tick up. The question is, would you want to play him at third base and roll with the Markakis Duvall in left field, or do you want to play him in left field and still use Camargo and Riley at third and see if Riley can take another step forward? When you're talking about Bryant, I think the Braves would play him at third, but I'm not so certain that would be the best use, and it's a very difficult question. It's going to come down to Austin Riley. So when you're talking about Chris Bryant, the thing that makes this all so troubling is the grievance about whether or not he's going to be a free agent after the 2020 season, or if he's going to have to wait till after 2021. Now, in all likelihood, and I say this with 99.99999% probability, he's not going to win that grievance. It would be a very bad precedent for Major League Baseball. They'd have to go back and start trying to retroactively apply that to other players. You'd have people making extra money from teams that have been out of the league for a while. So I don't think there's any hope of Bryant winning it, but it does matter because it affects the package that the Cubs could ask for and could conceivably get in return. If you're just talking about a player of Chris Bryant's caliber who has 2 years left and you want to be conservative and say he's worth about 10 more, that's really good over 2 years, but it is going to affect what you give up because you know he's a Scott Boras client. He's likely, and he's going to be 29 at the oldest when he reaches free agency. He's going to be looking for a big payday. So when you're bringing in a guy that you know you're probably not going to be able to sign to an extension, you're going to have to bid for him, it does take down what you're willing to give away. And for the Cubs, they're in a bad spot. Everybody knows Chris Bryant's not re-signing with the Cubs. Everybody knows that relationship is broken. So the Cubs have to get rid of him or they're going to get nothing for him. The Cubs aren't going to do that. They're already strapped right now having to try to find a way to keep most of that core together because don't forget, they brought all those guys up together. Talking about Anthony Rizzo, who they traded for, brought up Chris Bryant, brought up Javier Baez, Kyle Schwarber. They have a lot going on, a lot of guys who are having to get paid at the same time. So in that sense, it's good for the Braves because you won't have to give up traditional superstar value in return. The problem is third base market is barren right now, and there's a few other teams besides the Braves, especially the Nationals, who need third baseman, the Nationals and the Rangers especially. And I know the Rangers signed Todd Frazier, but let's not pretend that if they couldn't get Chris Bryant, they wouldn't kick Todd Frazier to the curb. But what that means is the Nationals can kind of up the bidding here, because the Nationals are going to be very desperate to one, replace Anthony Rendon's bat in the lineup, because without Rendon, that lineup does not look like it's anything to be feared. And two, they're going to be looking to try to repeat. They're not going to want to win a World Series and fall short of the playoffs. So they're going to be very motivated. They don't have the same prospects that the Braves do, but a lot of these teams don't know as much about how other teams value prospects, and they just look at rankings. Like very similar to what Miami did when Miami was dealing away Christian Yelich. And the thought process was they took Lewis Brinson because the Braves wouldn't give them Ronald Acuna, but the Brewers gave them Lewis Brinson. Both of them were number ones in their system, but I think we can all agree that Lewis Brinson was not the prospect that Ronald Acuna was. Just because they're both number one in the system doesn't make them equal. The problem is the Cubs know how good the Braves farm system is, and while Carter Kieboom is the name that keeps getting thrown around for the Nationals, and Carter Kieboom is a pretty high-end prospect, but Carter Kieboom does not equal Drew Waters or Christian Pache. And the Braves, I'm here to tell you, the Braves aren't trading Pache except for a select few deals, and I highly, highly doubt they trade Waters unless it's just a super package. I don't see them trading Drew Waters for anybody less than an already established superstar. There's a lot to go into here. So for the Braves, a fair offer for Bryant would probably be, I would imagine it would be something centered around Bryce Wilson. Depending on what the Cubs want in return. Now, I have said earlier that I wouldn't be shocked if it were Austin Riley who was the main piece going back to the Cubs, because the Cubs could look at Austin Riley and look at his big-time power and say, well, he has the prospect pedigree. We can fix his issues that he had at the major league level, especially with the breaking balls and everything like that. But if you're going to do something like Austin Riley, I don't think that Alex would want to package Austin Riley and Bryce Wilson together. Maybe because he just has to kind of find some space here with some of these prospects who have no room on the major league club, and you're cluttering up your farm system and you're preventing guys from progressing because there's no spots for them to move up to. But it's not exactly an easy decision to make, because you never want to overpay, because depth is such an important thing for teams that aren't going to be in the $200 million salary range. Your minor league depth is so important. You need to have these cheap pieces who you can plug and play when other guys start to get too expensive. We know we don't have to worry about Albies. We know we don't have to worry about Acuna. But you still got to worry about Soroka, Max Fried, Dansby Swanson. You got to get Freddie Freeman extended again. You got to worry about a lot of stuff here. Austin Riley at some point they're going to have to make decisions. Sean Newcomb, Tuki Toussaint, Bryce himself, Kyle Wright. There's a lot of players that you're going to have to juggle around here and figure out who do you believe in, who can you deal for the right price, and what is the correct way to go. And even adding Chris Bryant, who I think would be a phenomenal player, there's still, you're going to have to replace more than just Josh Donaldson's on-field stats. You have to replace his presence. And I'm not usually one to tout about veteran presence and things like that. I think a lot of the times it's overrated. It tends to only be brought up when it's a team that's performing well. It's not really ever brought up about a team of veterans who's underperforming, like Kansas City, for instance. When you're talking about Josh Donaldson, the other thing that made him such a good fit for this team was his attitude was something that this team just did not have and does not have at this moment. Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies and Camargo, they're all very, they've got a lot of swag. They've got a lot of panache to them. They're very much out there. They're very outspoken. And even Freddie is as well. They're very open. You can tell what they're feeling. They're very exciting. They're very excitable. But Donaldson had a different air about him, where Donaldson was more of a, we're going to go do this. A lot of these other guys, they're a little bit more, and I don't want this to sound bad, but it's going to, they're a little bit more front runners. So when things are going well, they're all super excited. But when things go badly, they're kind of down a little bit. They're up and down. Donaldson is an even keel at all points, all the time, constantly. He thinks he is the best player out there, and he's going to show everybody that he's the best player out there. That sort of confidence is contagious. And it's something that right now the Braves do not have. And that is something that I think even more than the statistics, which were very, very good for Josh Donaldson, I think the attitude and the confidence is going to be a bigger deal to replace, because confidence is contagious, both good and bad. So if you get a team that's used to riding high and riding low, that's not going to be a good and even season. You like even keels, for an example. Like Nick Markakis is an even keeled guy, but he's not a Josh Donaldson type presence where Donaldson is, we're the best team. I'm the best player and I'm going to drag you guys with me and we're going to win because I'm the best player. That's a different type of leadership. That's something the Braves really haven't had since Chipper Jones. So I'll be very interested to see how this continues to progress. We'll be looking forward to this for the rest of the offseason, I'm sure, until some sort of move is made. Now, there are more moves out there, but we're going to touch on those at some other shows later on in the week because I'm rapidly running out of time. So I'm going to end with this today. This offseason is almost a Jekyll and Hyde. So I personally, Dylan Short, cannot be very angry at this offseason, because the number one thing I wanted them to do was spend money. And the Braves are going to go into next offseason, even if they don't add another big move, they're going to go into next season with an opening day payroll around $130-135 million. That's going to be the highest opening day payroll they have had in, I would guess, a decade. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but you guys can look it up. I would bet that it's going to be the highest payroll number for the Braves in a decade. And while I do believe they're going to add somebody big, because I don't think they're going to roll into the season with Travis d'Arnaud batting cleanup, you're looking at a team that's going to be around $160 million on opening day, $150, $160 million on opening day. And that is all I have asked for from the Braves for years. You don't have to be a $200 million team to win, especially if you've got guys like Acuna and Albies who are phenomenal players, 5-win type players, 6-7 type win for Acuna. And you're talking about, you don't have to pay them $30 million a year. Freddie Freeman makes 25 and he makes the most. I mean, you're talking about guys like this. You get to complement with great young players who are still cheap. So you don't have to go out there and spend $20 million on every position. It allows you to be more flexible. But the Braves have to take advantage of this time because it's not going to last forever. Acuna is going to start making, and while he's never going to be paid exactly what he's worth, he's going to start making non-trivial money here very shortly. His escalators kick in very quickly. For Albies, it's not as bad, but for Acuna, you're going to start getting him to $15 and $17 million very quickly. So the time to strike on one of these deals is now. You got to get some of these guys here quick, and I do think Alex is good for it. In the coming shows, we'll talk about a few more players that I think could be good fits, maybe some guys that they've been talked about, but different strategies to replace what you're losing with Josh Donaldson. But for now, I'm just going to ask you guys what your thoughts in the offseason are, whether you think it's a disappointment, whether you can't really grade it right now, whether you're still happy with the offseason no matter what happens. There's some options for all of you. I know you guys are all differing Braves fans. You guys all have your own opinions. I love hearing your opinions. Hopefully things can work out and we can look forward to a great Braves season coming up, and we can look forward to a three-peat in the division. And hopefully we can look forward to winning our first division series in about 20 years. But for now, I'm going to call it quits for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Locked On Braves, and I will be back on Wednesday right here on Locked On Braves.